Welcome to the UUSM Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our community and the world. I'm your host, Jack Brennan. This is our 100th episode of the UUSM Connections Podcast, and I'm so excited that I was able to work that out to be this interview. Our guest today is Reverend Laura Thompson, our new minister here at UUSM. Rev Laura was a ministerial intern and campus minister at the UU Church of Davis, California. In 2015, she completed a chaplain residency at United Hospital and received her Master's of Divinity from United Theological Seminary in New Brighton, Minnesota. For decades before that, Laura was a chef and food service director. Lucky for us, she still loves to cook. From 2016 until recently, she's been the lead minister at Minnesota Valley UU Fellowship in Bloomington, Minnesota. Although she has lived nearly all of her adult life in Minnesota, she is a third-generation Californian, born in Mountain View, and she lived in the San Jose area until she was 13. Laura lives with her spouse, Emily Campa, and their dog, Stella. Welcome to the podcast, Rev Laura, and welcome to UUSM. I'm really glad to get the chance to interview you for the UUSM Connections podcast and appreciate you making time in these very busy last few days before you officially become the minister on August 1st.
Thanks, Jack. It's really great to be here. And on your 100th show, nonetheless, that's kind of special, too. And I'm really excited about our next chapter together at UUSM. So can't wait to get going.
Me, too. I have a lot of questions for you, just even from that short bio. Our listeners know that you lived in the San Jose area until you were 13. Tell me about your family back then.
Sure. So I'm the oldest of three kids. I have a sister 2 years younger and a brother who's 4 years younger. Back then in my early childhood, we all lived in the Bay Area, San Jose area more specifically. So my maternal grandparents and all of my extended family were in the area. In 1980-81, we had this like exodus of my family. My aunt, who was married to an Italian fellow, their big family all moved to Italy. My family moved to Minnesota, and my grandparents and my other aunt and my uncles all moved to Colorado. But since then, quite a few of us have relocated back to the West Coast. My parents currently live on the Oregon coast, and my sister now lives in Hollister. I have a niece who lives in Belmont, like really one exit away from where I'm living right now. And even some of my Italian-American cousins have relocated back here. I also want to note that I have an adult son when we're talking about family. Just want to let people know that I have an adult son. He's in his 30s and he lives in Portland.
All right, cool. What kind of a little kid were you? How would your parents have described you back then?
I was really shy as a kid. I'm a natural introvert. Sometimes being shy can come with a territory of being an introvert. And if I'm being honest, I would also say that my introversion, along with some, you can get some real insight into me, alongside some of the instability of my childhood, because there was some instability and some other factors of my childhood, led me not just to being shy, but also feeling really somewhat isolated and unseen. I realize I'm not painting a super happy picture about this. And it was hard for me sometimes as a kid, but that's truthful and honest about who I was as a kid. I was shy and very introverted. And I was also very typically the oldest child. I was well-behaved and responsible and in charge. Things that I carried on with me throughout the rest of my life.
Yeah. What kind of church, if any, did you grow up in?
Yeah, my family wasn't really a churchy family. I think my grandma sometimes watched church on TV, which is kind of terrible. We didn't really have much to do with church until we moved to Minnesota, and then we started going to a Lutheran church. Everybody in Minnesota, I think, is a little Lutheran. It's just a thing there. I always say that I was raised loosely Lutheran.
You moved to Minnesota at the age of 13. What precipitated that mass exodus that took place?
Yeah, so my stepdad's family, they all live in Minnesota. I was 13, so I didn't know necessarily all the reasons. I knew that we were moving to be closer to his family. But looking back, I'm like, also, my mom's whole family was leaving and scattering. So there wouldn't be much family left for us if we had stayed in California. It was to be closer to family.
And at the age of 13, were you excited about moving or did you dread it?
I was not excited. Sixth and seventh grade were some of those really unstable years for my family. And it had a fairly traumatic effect on me. And I kind of had deepening feelings of isolation and feeling lost and not having a sense of belonging. It's kind of an unhappy part of my story, which we'll all see little pop-ups of in occasional sermons. All of our wounds feed our ministries, those of us that are ministers. Those feelings of not fitting in, if not feeling like I had a place to belong, yeah, they definitely affected my ministry. Like, I think my ministry is a lot based on building connections, speaking to the person who's in charge of connections here. I mean, I really see that as a catalyst for healing the world. To answer more briefly, it was, I don't know if it was dread so much as it was more of the same of the instability that was going on in my life. And I definitely had false notions of what I thought Minnesota was going to be like. I thought, you know, as a typical West Coast raised child, anybody who's coastal thinks that flyover country is all farms and living in a different time. I thought we were going to live on farm and have horses. And I think that my idea of Minnesota was very heavily and wrongly tainted by watching too many episodes of Little House on the Prairie. Lo and behold, we moved to a city and it was much the same with different weather than it was here.
How were your teen years after that big move? What were you into in high school?
Yeah, midway through my sophomore year, I actually transferred to an alternative high school called St. Paul Open School, which was a smaller school where all of the burnouts and freaks and misfits went. It really saved me. It was a small school. There were only 22 kids in my class. It really helped me with a sense of belonging and fitting in that I needed so much. It saved me in a lot of ways, and I'm really grateful for that experience. I would categorize myself as a bit of a misfit in high school, a little rebellious. I did have a mohawk at one point. It was the mid-80s. Also, I came out in high school, which wasn't all that common back in the mid-80s, so I was definitely on the misfit side of things, I guess.
How did that go, coming out while you were in high school? How did it go with your
parents? Yeah, with my parents, I mean, my stepdad, I don't know that he ever really said anything. My mom was loving and accepting and also struggled with it more privately. She didn't show me that she was struggling. It was a really different time. It's much more common now. People coming out at an early age and parents maybe have an inkling as to how they might deal with that. And I don't think that people were as prepared for it then, but they were always supportive and loving of me. And so I wasn't outcast from the family or any of those terrible, terrible things. And for me, a lot of that sense of belonging and feeling lost when I came out, like, there was a lot of healing for me coming out because a lot of things made sense. And I understood myself when I had felt so lost for mostly my entire life up to that point. It was the first time of really being able to find myself and be sure of who I was. So it mattered a lot to me. And as far as my peers go, like I said, I went to that high school where it was a bunch of misfits anyway. So if anything, it was a badge of honor to have there because it was just another way of me differentiating myself from the world and sticking it to the man. So that high school supported those kind of values versus popular jocks and cheerleader. Like, we didn't have any of that kind of stuff there. To be outspoken and or to be yourself, to be your true self, was the best thing that you could do at the high school that I went to. So I was accepted and loved just for who I was. I was lucky. It was very
lucky. Yeah, that's great. Great. Did you follow the typical route of going straight to college after high school?
No, I didn't. I followed the other somewhat possibly typical route of getting pregnant by the time I was 19. Though I had come out, so I'm technically bisexual. But then I had to tell my mom I was pregnant. That was fun, too.
I didn't follow that route.
My mother, she went through it all. I had my son when I was 19, and I realized it was just he and I. His father was never around in the picture, and I needed some skills to be able to do something. I had wanted to go to college, but nobody in my family ever went to college. It wasn't a usual route. Like, nobody naturally knew how to navigate that or anything. I had always loved to cook, and so I went to culinary school and learned how to do that. And then I didn't end up actually going to a traditional college until I was in my late 30s. And I did end up being the first person in my family to graduate from college. Many, many years later, I went to college in my 30s. I have a bachelor's degree in history from Winona State University. And originally I thought I was going to be a teacher or maybe a professor. But then I set my sights on law school, actually. And I was going to go to law school when I was done with college. And then I started going to UU Church and I ended up in seminary.
If you didn't start college until you were 38,
mm-hmm.
What were you doing during those?
Well, yeah, so I worked in the food industry.
Right.
For decades. I always loved cooking, so it was a natural career for me. Within that career, I had many jobs. I was a baker. I was a chef. I was a food service director. I worked in small little mom and pop cafes. I worked in fine dining restaurants. I worked in corporate food service. I worked at a camp for a while. I worked at the executive chef at a senior living facility. It was very varied for me. It did lots of things, so.
Interesting. When you decided to go to college in your 30s, what was your goal at that point? You were already doing things and living life, and what changed that made you go to college?
Well, I thought my son was going to be the first one in the family to go to college since I didn't go to college. So I'd always raised him with this expectation that he would just go to college. And then his senior year, he and I were kind of having it out about it. And he said he didn't want to go to college. He wanted to be a musician and be a rock star. And that college was really my dream. And I was like, dang it, he's right. And I had empty nest syndrome, something fierce. With the thought of him leaving, A, B, even in my late 30s, that career was starting to take its toll on my body, and I knew that I couldn't stay. It's really hard to stay in the culinary field as you get older. It's not a career you retire from. It's a career that retires you at a certain point because it's just really, it's stressful, and there's a lot of toll on your body. I was like, fine, go be a rock star, and I'll go to college. I think because I had him so young, part of it was just that I'd given up some of my youth and that space to explore some of my own personal things that I wanted to do. So I was like, oh, well, now's my time to figure out what I want to do. I went to college and, again, like I said, thought that maybe I would go into teaching or academics. And then I thought about law school for a while. And, yeah, I ended up in seminary with it all. Nowadays, when I suggest to people, just go to college and you don't even have to pick something because when you get there, things change and you end up going a different route half the time. Just be open. Let it lead you wherever it'll lead you. My son finally did go and get some schooling after the rock star thing. It didn't work out for him. He's still a musician, but it didn't work as a career for him. Now he works at Intel, so. Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, when and how did you meet Emily?
Emily and I met in the modern old-fashioned way, which is online. And on Match.com, we were matched in 23 out of 25 areas. So seemed like a good match. And that was 18 years ago this month. And I was living in Winona at the time. I was still finishing up my undergrad there, and she was in the Twin Cities. The first year and a half of our relationship was long distance, and then I moved back up to the Twin Cities, where I had lived years before, and the rest is history. We're still together and starting this new adventure in California now.
Yeah. Well, how did you decide, and when did you decide to become a minister?
So that's kind of a weird, peculiar story. The first time I ever had an inkling about it was when I was a chef, and I was a chef in this small town in a touristy area of Minnesota in the southeast part of the state. I lived there with my partner at the time, Kelly, and this is how I became a UU. At the time, I was trying to figure out where I was spiritually with things, and there's this website called beliefnet.org, and they have something called the Belief-O-Matic Quiz. And so I went and I took this Belief-O-Matic Quiz, and it's really in-depth, actually, and it asks you all these very serious questions, and then it spits out what faith traditions match best with your beliefs. I took this quiz, it spit out these faiths that I matched best with, and the one on the top said Unitarian Universalist, which I said, what the hell is that? I've never even heard of that before. Then I asked Jeeves, that's what you did at the time.
That's what you did, yeah.
Those of us that are old enough to remember asking Jeeves, I asked Jeeves what Unitarian Universalism was, and Jeeves sent me to their website, and I was like, well, that sounds interesting. And then I saw there was a church about an hour from where we lived. So Kelly and I drove up there one Sunday to go. We're sitting there watching the service and everything's fine. And the minister started preaching. And I was like, huh. Just felt a little something. I was like, And I nudged Kelly and I said, hey, I should totally have that job. And she said, what job? And I said, Unitarian Universalist minister. And she says, but you're not even a Unitarian Universalist.
Really? In a membership first, or?
I know, but wouldn't I be great at that job? Doesn't that just seem like the thing that I should be doing in life? And she laughed at me and said I was ridiculous. And then we didn't go back, and not because we didn't like it. We didn't go back because it was an hour away from where we live. We were both chefs. We worked Saturday night. Getting up early wasn't the thing for us. And I forgot all about it. Years later, I'm going to Winona State, studying history. Think I'm going to go to law school and all this, move up to be with Emily. We move in together. And I was like, hey, I really would like to explore some spiritual stuff now that I'm back in a big city again. And she said, great. And I said, you know, I went to a UU church once and I think I liked it. Let's check that out. And so we went. And sure enough, the second the minister started speaking, I was like, oh, crap. Where's that thing again? And the next week I was there, and the next week I went and I talked to the minister. And at the time, I deferred my enrollment at law school. I was already accepted into law school and had deferred my enrollment because I was moving in with Emily, and my son's rock and roll career wasn't working out, so he was moving in with us. And I thought first year law school, not the best time to adjust to these big life changes as well. Then I talked to the minister. I ended up going to seminary. So I was becoming a UU at the same time that I was becoming a UU minister.
Wow.
Which is a different kind of path, but that just goes to show that there's many different kinds of paths to get you to where you are.
That's for sure. And boy, where did you end up being a ministerial intern at the UU church in Davis?
Oh, yeah. There's like a clearinghouse for interns. So you can see all over the country who's got internship openings. I looked at the internship clearinghouse to see what was there. There wasn't a space for me in the Twin Cities. And also because I was so new to UUism, I knew that it would benefit me in getting my ministerial stamp approval from the UUA later if I went somewhere out of my region. Because at the time, they liked that if you didn't have a lot of UU experience for you to go to a different part of the country and see what Unitarian Universalism was like there. I took a short list of some of the places that I would consider going, to my minister at the time, Rob Eller Isaacs, and asked him on this list, what's a good place? And he said, Davis is really good because Beth Banks has had interns for years and their health congregation, despite the heat. Now, having been a person who grew up in California, I was well aware of the weather in the valley. And yeah, to be honest, that was a little discouraging because I was like, geez, 100 degree heat every day in August is not something of a, you know, in September. But anyway, I went and it was a wonderful experience. And Davis is a lovely, lovely community, even though it's so hot there sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the Minnesota Valley UU Fellowship your first position as a UU minister?
Yeah, that's my first and only space previous to coming here. I was coming back from my internship and I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do yet. I hadn't applied for any jobs anywhere because that would probably have required Emily and I moving. And also during my whole internship, I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to go into parish ministry or be a chaplain. And it wasn't until the very end of my internship that I realized that I wanted to go into parish ministry. And actually, this is more of that healing stuff, because what I got in Davis was that as a minister, I could find a place of belonging in a congregation too, which was another healing bit for me for all that early childhood stuff, right? Anyway, I'm coming back to Minnesota, and lo and behold, Minnesota Valley UU Fellowship has a negotiated resignation with their minister, which you all have some history with and know how that goes. And it's very sudden and you're like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? That's where they were at. And here comes this intern coming back. I was hired as a contract and with very little experience outside my internship, and they needed somebody and I needed a job. And that's how it started, with a possibility of renewal and then a possibility of a call later. It worked out and we were just what each other needed, and we had a great 9 years.
Tell us how you grew during your ministry there. That's a tough thing, just starting from zero and having to handle everything.
Yeah, you know, well, and what to handle, like, boy, what a time to become a minister. I started my ministry there in 2016, just a few months shy of the 2016 election, which was such horrible results for so many of us. That was the start of my ministry, with folks who were afraid of what was going to happen and then navigating through all the things that did happen during the current administration's first term. And then, yeah, lots of other things. We threw a lot together with Trump and with the pandemic, with George Floyd, just a lot of spaces to grow. Everything I know about ministry right now deepened and developed while I was there. Not necessarily developed, but definitely it deepened. I knew as far as book and theory before I got there, but just what it means to be a congregation. I would say the biggest thing that I learned there was how important community is. You know, when I first got there and I asked people why they were there, I was disheartened when they all said it was their community and that's where they were rooted in, because I thought it would be the message. I was naive. I was a minister and I had these high ideas that it would be the message. And I was a little disheartened by that. I'm like, isn't it the message? Isn't it our goals? Isn't it our values? And 9 years later, I've come to see that you can't have any of that if you don't have community and belonging first. So that's the biggest thing I learned.
And where you're coming to UUSM, that is it for everybody. Every time I talk to people about why they're here, why they stay, all of that, it's all this community. And even our visitors, no one ever says, I'm coming here to deepen my values or to learn about what you believe. It's always, I'm looking for a community.
Which isn't to say that our values aren't important. It's just that,
of course,
the community is the soil, and you can't have seeds growing without the soil.
Yeah. Right. What brought you to UUSM? How did you find us and we find you?
How I got to UUSM was, you know, you were looking, and so you were on the clearinghouse for how ministers look for positions. I knew for a while I wanted to relocate back to the West Coast. And so when I did finally decide to go into search, I was very specific about where I might want to look. I only applied at UUSM, and I also applied at Santa Rosa. I was very particular. I'm like, these are the only places that are currently listed. I didn't have to leave my congregation where I was at. I thought, well, if it doesn't work out within one of these two places, I can always go somewhere else. I was very specific. And especially from the get-go, San Mateo's location was like, it's a great location. It's a beautiful place to live. The weather is perfect. It's right next to an international airport, so I could get cheap flights. My son and I could see each other much more easily and more frequently, with him at PDX and me next to SFO. My sister lives an hour away. My niece is right next door. And really, location, location, location was key. You're about the same size as the church I was serving, which doesn't mean there's not room for growth, but I wouldn't want to serve a really large congregation. It's just the right size. I like the size congregation. I went on a trip to the Philippines in seminary, and I have some heartstrings there. So the fact that you had a Philippine sister church and ministry, that was a little tug at my heart as well. The more I got to know you all through interviews, I just thought, oh yeah, I think it would be a good fit. I'm really glad to be here.
We're really glad that you're here too. You don't really know our congregation yet, but from what you know and what you've been told, do you have any kind of vision about how you hope these first few months will go?
Yeah, well, unlike the beginning of my last ministry where I went in thinking it's all about the message, I know better now, and I know it's all about community and relationships. And so I'm really just interested in getting to know you and observing your systems and how you do things, what's working well for you and what isn't working well, and just being really, and even beyond a few months, I mean, really the first year of my ministry with you, a lot of it will just be observational. I'm going to be working, of course, but I'm not going to implement this, that, or the other thing as much, because I really just need to get to know you all and find out and discover with you where you want to go next, work with you on what do you want to do next and what do you feel like isn't working well and how can we work on that together. But really just getting to know people and getting to know how you all do ministry together, that's my focus right now. So I know that sounds really great. There'll be harder things to do. They'll still be there in a few months.
Is there anything else you want to share before we go to our last segment?
Oh, yeah. I just want to remind everybody that we are, Emily and I are new to the area. I welcome any recommendations for places to go or things to see, or if you know about art fairs or festivals or anything going on that you think might be interesting, or that you like restaurants, places that you like to shop, downtown areas that are quainter and fun, because there's so many downtown areas everywhere. I don't know which ones are cool and which ones aren't. Just email me. Help us get acquainted to the area.
I'm not going to drop this episode until Friday. So is it fair now if we go ahead and tell everybody that your email address is revlaura@usanmateo.org?
That's right.
Okay. Now we're going to do a segment that I call Quick Hitters. I'm going to ask you a quick question. Your answer does not have to be quick, though. Are you ready?
I'm ready for this.
Okay. If you came with a warning label, what would that label say?
I think it would say, I'm not crabby. That's just my face.
The problem with that is I haven't seen you make a crabby looking face.
Oh, you haven't seen me working yet.
Oh, okay.
That's when I'm working.
You're in.
People ask, you look really tired. Are you crabby? I'm like, no, it's just my aging face and gravity. Sorry.
All right. Yeah. What was the best cooking advice you had?
This is metaphorical. Stir frequently. That'll preach.
Yeah. For real. When did you realize that you were a grown-up?
That's an interesting question. I mean, there's some things that I want to say, like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm the oldest of three, so I was in charge at an early age, and you kind of feel grown up that way, but you're not grown up, and there's sometimes I don't feel grown up at all. And then, yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I think we're always growing up and then always trying to channel our inner childhood. I think it's a balance, but I feel grown up when I look at my aging face in the mirror, that's for sure.
What keeps you up at night?
Well, I'm a bit of a night owl, actually, so I'm usually just up at night. And when I am up, I'm either scrolling funny videos on my phone or sometimes watching scary movies. I like scary movies. So.
Like horror movies or more like suspenseful movies?
Both, but I do like horror movies, but I'm very particular about the horror movies that I like. I like them to be kind of smart, not just like thrashy, like gory things. I almost like them to be symbolic about something else.
What's the worst movie you ever saw?
Batman and Robin was an absolute horrible movie. It's one of the worst movies I ever saw. I almost walked out of the theater. It was so bad. I couldn't believe it. It was a long time ago. I guess I haven't seen a really bad movie that I wanted to walk out of the theater of since then.
If you had to live in another country, what country would it be?
I love France.
France.
Yeah.
You've been there?
Just once. But I just love the whole French lifestyle. Also, the foodie in me respects the way that they respect food, I think. So.
What totally useless skill do you have?
Totally useless skill. I know the words to way too many cheesy 70s songs. You know, it's funny, like that stuff sticks in your long-term memory, right?
It does.
So it's just there. I can't remember where I put my keys 5 minutes ago, but I know the words to Muskrat Love by Captain and Tennille. Why?
I actually saw a pin just the other day, and it said 80% of my memory is song lyrics.
It's true. I think it's that muscle memory thing that it just stays there.
Yeah. What's something you'd like to learn to do?
I would really like to explore some more like artistic things. I've taken a couple painting classes, but I'd like to take more painting classes and learn how to do that a little bit better.
What's the first concert you ever attended, and how did you get there?
The first concert I ever attended was Pat Benatar.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure we took the bus.
Hit me with your best shot.
That's right. He's a big Pat Benatar fan back in the 80s.
Cool. Since you were a professional chef, I have an important question for you. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Absolutely not.
Isn't it meat between two pieces of bread?
I mean, yes, but I don't think that's the only qualification for a sandwich. I don't think it's a sandwich. I think it's something else. Like a burger's not really a sandwich. It's a burger.
No.
It's in its own category.
Okay. I'm with you. And I can argue either side of it.
All right. Last question.
Yeah.
Here's your mission. You have to build in your head your dream strip mall with 5 chain store establishments. You don't have to live there or anything. It doesn't have to have everything you might need. But in this dream strip mall, what chain stores do you have? And no, you can't change the premise of the question to make them all independent small businesses, at least not until you reveal what the 5 chain stores are. Go.
I'm just thinking of places that I go to, right, that I need in my life. These might be a little more on the practical side of things, but I'm going to go with Trader Joe's because snacks.
Cheap.
And I don't know if you have this store here or not, but I know it's a chain. Penzi Spices.
Yes, we do. We do have that store here.
Yeah. Because if you haven't been to Penzi's, you should go to Penzi's and you should support them because they're always flipping a big middle finger to the establishment.
That's
bad about them. Starbucks.
Okay.
Because I'm going to need some coffee.
Sure.
That's my usual chain of choice on that. Though, of course, a small local coffee shop would be better, but you said I can't do that. World Market.
Okay.
Which there's one by my house here. I live out near Bridgepoint, and I was really excited about that. Again, because snacks. You see a theme here? So the imported snacks are at World Market. And then on the uber practical side of things, I'd say Home Depot.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds like a very nice strip mall.
I feel like I could get many needs met there. And I'm also, I like to be very efficient and don't like to make a lot of stops when I run on errands. So I could go there, get my coffee.
Get your hardware.
Get snacks and some easy dinner options at Trader Joe's. And yeah, if I need something for the house, it's at Home Depot or World Market. If I need a new tablecloth, I'm good to go.
2 thumbs up on that strip mall. Very good. Thank you so much for sitting down for this interview, Rev Laura. I really enjoyed getting to just talk to you. I have only seen your video over and over, but it's really nice to actually be able to sit and talk to you. And I'm looking forward to working with you and to having you as our minister.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to know you all better in the coming months. I'll be at the service on August 3rd and look forward to meeting people that look for me if you're in committees or groups or whatever, and they're meeting these next 2 months. I plan on stopping by as many of those as I can to help get to know folks. Please wear your name tags to everything.
We have really good name tags and people good about wearing them.
Good, good. That will help me for a long while. So please, even if it's just a committee meeting and you think you don't need it, I need it and I might be there. Please, please wear your name tags.
Very good. And thanks to our listeners, as always, keep making connections.